Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. It's Sunday morning here in London, a beautiful, bright, clear, sunny morning, and we are live for the 126th week of our Turning Towards Life practice and project. And I want to say welcome to all of you, those of you who've got up early in the morning to watch us live or are staying up late, depending upon where you are in the world. And maybe you're listening later on a podcast in a car or home or on a bike or who knows what. We're so glad that you get to be with us. And I'm feeling really happy this morning that spring looks like it's springing, which is a great joy and a great relief. And very glad to see you, Lizzie.
Yes, I'm feeling slightly unreasonably glad as well. Hello to everybody and thank you for being with us. Justin has just done this excellent thing of pointing me to something that one of our listeners has written about us beneath our announcement that we made on our 10,000 podcast listens. And I don't think this person would mind me mentioning her name, but this is just a very small shout out, as they do on the radio, to Melanie, just to say thank you for the words that you've written to us. And it's such a joy that I think, you know, we often say this, you know, even if one person listens and even if it's just us, it's really a joy anyway. And then when somebody says something about us that means that it matters to them, it just makes such a difference in my experience of doing this. So I'm very grateful for people just expressing themselves and saying what they think, because it gives us even more determination, I think, to keep doing it and to keep being inspired by the things that we're reading and bringing them here, and to just to do this thing together. And who knows what this really is, in a way. You know, we think we have no idea who listens, actually. And frequently I talk to people and they tell me that they listen, and I had no idea that they listen because they hadn't written anything and I hadn't seen their name anywhere. And so this is the deal with something like this. It gets into the world and then we don't know. So anyway, I'm just very grateful to everybody. And on this sunny Sunday morning, I'm feeling unreasonably hopeful. And this source I'm bringing as well is something that brings me great hope. And I find in the things that Michael Mead writes a deep kind of hopefulness about being a human being, that even when it's very, very, very dark, there's a way that there are possibilities. That's how I feel about his work, is that it brings a kind of hopefulness that I very much relate to when things feel bleak, and even extendedly bleak for some people. And there's this something else that Michael Mead's writing about that can be real support to us. So this is just a short quote, if you like, from his book Awakening the Soul, and I'm going to begin by reading. The ancient sense of transformation assumes that there is something essential within us that we can turn to and learn from, that we can draw upon repeatedly and grow from continuously. Besides involving a change in consciousness, such a deep inner change also includes a process of self-healing that can occur in moments of wholeness, arising from the source of the deep self and soul within us. The old reason for not giving up on someone, even if they have failed repeatedly, is because a genuine turnaround in life is possible at any time and at any age, because such moments are timeless. When it comes to waking up and turning things around, it's never too late.
So I'll read it to you. It's from Awakening the Soul by Michael Mead. The ancient sense of transformation assumes that there is something essential within us that we can turn to and learn from, that we can draw upon repeatedly and grow from continuously. Besides involving a change in consciousness, such a deep inner change also includes a process of self-healing that can occur in moments of wholeness arising from the source of the deep self and soul within us. The old reason for not giving up on someone, even if they have failed repeatedly, is because a genuine turn around in life is possible at any time and at any age. Because such moments are timeless when it comes to waking up and turning things around. It is never too late.
So this is not an easy source for me to talk about, but I really want to try because I feel like at the moment when I'm faced with, you know, what does it mean to heal? My own sense of healing, I think, comes from my contact with my essential self. This, what Michael Mead's calling the deep self and soul, and or the something essential. And I have a sense of there being, in a way, the small self and this deeper self, this bigger self. And as I allow my bigger self, my essentialness, to bathe all of my small self as it arises in the kind of spaciousness that it is, the kind of presence that it is, my small self stuff holds less weight. I think that's the best way in this moment that I can say it, but I really want to talk about it because I feel like so many of us are convinced of ourselves. We're convinced that our thoughts are real, that our beliefs about ourselves are solid, that our inner critic is truthful, that the voices that bring us down and shame us are completely valid. And that keeps us really, really, really small. And I know for me, when someone tells me of those parts of themselves, and also when I tell myself those things, I get completely kind of hoodwinked into it. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's right. That sounds worldly, it sounds wise, it sounds rational. You know, of course, you know, you're worthless if you haven't done this, this, and this. Yeah, I mean, I completely get it. And there's a kind of dead endness about that, about the small self convincing us that we're the thing that it's telling us that we are. And so the only thing I feel like I can draw on, because the personality in that way is such a dead end, is this knowledge and understanding that I know I have of my essential self, and that I know that that's not just me, that everyone has an essential self. And maybe because I'm living with a baby right now, I can see the essential baby in all of us much more clearly, because that's who I'm living with. And that kind of openness and that kind of wide-eyed, forgiving, present, moment-to-moment presence is so essential and so real. And if we could make more contact with that and appreciate that which in us, which is essential, which is this depth of self, and let that imbue all of our habitual self-criticism and meanness and treating ourselves really badly, actually. If we could allow that to flow and make contact with that, it wouldn't help but shift and gentlify all the ways that we're harsh with ourselves. And it's really tricky to talk about. I don't find it an easy thing, but I know that it's important, because I don't think without this I would be able to shift things when they needed shifting and change things when they needed changing, because I would just be dealing with one side of the story instead of both sides that are needed to see the full picture.
I think you're talking very beautifully about it, and Lizzie, what you say sparks off many things in me. And I think the part that's most touching me at the moment is what it takes for us to trust that there is always of something of us, and of course that also means always something of other people, that is other than this reactive, tightly bound, I'm absolutely certain that this is the way things are, and often they're terrible, or I'm right, or, you know, all of those kind of things. Our capacity to trust that we are, that humans are something other than that as well, is what I hear in what you're saying and in what Michael Mead is writing. And it seems to me that the right now is this sort of paradox, or maybe it's this paradox is the wrong word, almost like a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy part, that the more we identify with and the more we get caught up with our smaller, more reactive, more certain of the I'm right self, the less easy it is for us to let go enough to trust that there's some depth to being a human. And I think depth is the word that I'm finding, that to be a human is to be a kind of depth. It's harder to trust that right in the time when actually we could most do with it. Which is why it's very important to be in this conversation. It's why it's very important to have people like Michael Mead write about it. Because there's the line in here that moves me more than anything else is actually right at the end, where he says it's never too late. That however tightly bound we may have been, however constrained by our certainties, however sure of our self-judgment and our judgment of other people, however reactive and rigid, however tiny we've made ourselves in the world, it's always possible because we, not because there's something far away that we have to reach for, but because it's always been right here. It's always been one of the gifts of being a human. It's something about the way that humans are, that we're constituted, that our depth and our openness and our reciprocity and our capacity to be truthful and to be courageous and to be loving and to be wise and all of those kind of things, they're really close by. And one of the things I'm coming to just as I'm speaking is what that might mean is that for many of us, or maybe for all of us, to find it is not something that's amenable to a giant amount of effort. In a way, when we pull and grab and grasp to try and get somewhere, we keep ourselves far away from this depth. So a big part of it is actually is our sort of letting go enough to have this part of us come forward. And I'm just thinking this thought, which is many times we get to do this for one another. A big part of who we humans can be is we can be those who are patient enough and loving enough and wise enough and inviting enough to invite this depth in one another, to see this depth in one another, to trust this depth in one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, that it feels like my responsibility to see and appreciate myself in this way as an essentialness, as a goodness, as a depth, as you're saying, as a timelessness, as a presence, because it then makes it possible for me to see it way more easily in others. And it's easier anyway to see it in others than myself. So if I can continue to see it in myself and continue to cultivate that relationship to the deeper self that I am, I can be with much more challenging situations in a way less reactive way, if this is my practice. is, and this practice is to appreciate myself, to forgive myself, to actively be loving towards myself in my thoughts, like to cultivate a way of lovingly thinking about myself and feeling about myself and appreciating my goodness and my good intention in the world. And as I do that, I can feel the depth of me, and then I can see that in other people. And I can feel that if I was purely in my reactive state and just a set of reactions in the world, which often I am, it would be so hard to even see my daughter and who she is and feel and sense her spirit and her sweetness and her, all I would really be seeing is her hunger and her thirst and her needs, instead of the whole package, which is, and of course I'm not seeing the whole package because I don't think I can, because the vastness of her and the vastness of a being is so big, but I can see more than her hunger and her thirst and her needs, because I know that exists. I 100% know that this essentialness about each of us exists, and I can practice learning to see it and feel it in her and in other people. And it feels so important, because without it, there is this very kind of dead endness to the personality of these kind of loops we get ourselves in, and the inescapable feeling of here I am again. And for some of us, that's a really, it's like an everyday reality that, certainly for me, I find myself getting a bit kind of hopeless about it until I remember that this is true. And I think I feel so drawn to this because, me too, with the it's never too late line, because it often feels like, you know, we've missed the boat, or I'm done for, or I've messed this up so royally that I can't change this. I can't get out of it. I'm done. And somehow our reactivity is also set our circumstances up in line with all the ways that we've been thinking about ourselves. So if I've been thinking that I'm worthless for a really long time, my life might look like it doesn't have any worth on the outside as well. Like I haven't done anything of worth, I haven't made a contribution. And to bring back a kind of hopefulness of worthiness inside of oneself is the kind of the beginning of the work, I guess. That then the world can start mirroring and manifesting in line with my worthiness rather than my feeling of worthlessness. And the fact that it can be never too late is like a freshness descending on me that says there's hope. And then with hope, it's like the cycle you were talking about shifts, because inject a little bit of hope in a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it can, the shape of that cycle can at least be shaken.
Yeah.
And there's a break in it somewhere, with presence, with hope, with my contact with my goodness. It doesn't follow the same path once that's been injected, and I try and cultivate that more and more.
It's really striking me as you're speaking, Lizzie, that one way of talking about this is that one of the gifts of being human is that there are many ways that things, and when I say things, I mean everything. I mean the world, ourselves, people, things, objects. There are many ways that they can be present to us. And it's, we can be really, really sort of narrow and closed in where something presents itself only in a particular way, like I am terrible, or you are irritating, or I am right and you are wrong. But that we also have, and I think this is what Michael Mead is getting at, we also have that of us which is wide open and able to bring things into presence in far richer, deeper ways. So the tree that's in my garden might one day show up as annoying because it's in the way of the sun, and it's just this annoying thing that I wish wasn't in the garden. But then there's another way that I can be, where I'm in contact with the depth and breadth and wideness of my own life, and the tree then presents itself with its beauty and its fragrance and its being part of a living web of things and its evolutionary history. So much more comes forward. And that's what we do as humans. We narrow and widen our capacity to bring into presence all the time. And when we're very, very narrow, those are the really troublesome places. I mean, sometimes it's really helpful when we're really focused on a particular thing, but the really troublesome places are where we narrow our way of being in relationship with the world and with us, which of course is our relationship of being, our way of being in relationship with ourselves, narrow so much that there doesn't feel like there's any room to move.
Yeah.
And we get really certain about things there. And there's one way to know it, at least for me. I know that my body gets more rigid and I get really certain. And for me, it's often something like being really afraid.
Yeah.
I'm really, really certain I have to be afraid, and I have to be afraid of everything, and I have to be afraid of you, and I have to be afraid of me. And so what I was really touched by what you said, which was that you were pointing out, it seemed to me, that when we shift our relationship with this one, with what's here, when we're more in contact with something other than that ordinary, reactive, tiny, tight self, then everything else opens. Other people become present to us in different ways. The world yeah. becomes present to us in different ways. And it seems to me that we have a way better chance of taking care of what matters to take care of, and having qualities come through that otherwise would not have space to come through. So proper deep care, or proper wisdom, or proper compassion, rather than some tiny sort of like a proxy for it, some tiny tight little version of it. And I think where this thought was heading to for me is that maybe one of the most important things for us to know about ourselves is that we are this, which I think is what Michael Mead. So because we forget ourselves in the midst of our feeling very, very small and tight, we think that that's all we are. I am this tightness. I am this tininess. I am this reactivity, and I never could be something else. And we need things, places, people that will keep on saying to us, no, that's not the sum of what being a human is. And that's the kind of remembering, that's what I think also what turning towards life, not just the name of this project, but turning towards life in its truest senses, is when we turn towards that which is deep and self-healing and all of the things that Michael Mead has to say about it.
Mm. I love what you're saying, Justin, and it's just reminding me of this thing I think is so important in all of our lives. Like, if we could take our reactivity and give it the job of reminding us that there's something more to remember here right now, things are different. So for example, if I'm like, yesterday I was struggling to get something in the back of my car, and I was so cross, and I was scrabbling around, and it was raining, and I was sort of mess, and Vesper was getting a bit wet, and Matthew's putting her in the car, and you know, all the dynamics of getting in a car with a partner or whatever are there. And I felt so reactive, I could feel my insides kind of clenching and worrying and all of the things. And I'm just looking back at it now and realizing that what I did was that I walked away and I breathed. And I saw whether I could just remember a little bit more than what was happening right now, just a little bit more. And I feel like I'm saying that story to kind of illustrate that when it is possible that when something triggers us, it can be a signal to open rather than a tipping point of going down the spiral into worse and worse thoughts and reactions and tensions and contractions. And even like reading this piece by Michael Mead, where parts of me go, well, I disagree or something, or I get defensive about it. I at least know that I need to go, oh, there's a defense in me. I need to stay here. Not I need to tell Michael Mead that his work's rubbish and reject it all, but I need to be opened by it. So whatever my reactivity is, there's a possibility that I could be opened by my reactivity rather than sent on some godforsaken, well-worn road that I've gone down 100,000 times in my reactivity, my defensiveness, and my rejection of ideas and concepts or whatever. And so I think that kind of using our reactivity as an indicator, as a little switch, if you like, that can go, oh, okay, I'm aware of this now. I can feel my defensiveness. I'm going to open to something rather than run or withdraw or do the things I normally do, whatever my patterns are. I have a choice point, basically, of deepening and seeing, like you say, seeing the tree for more than just it's blocking the sunlight out. And actually, that's completely over the piece of the patio where I want to have my sunny lunch. And actually, the sun's in the wrong place. But I could then see the tree for the tree and the sun for the sun and the sky for the sky. In even one different way is a kind of liberation than just blaming the tree for me not being able to sit where I want to sit in the sunshine. And in actual fact, it doesn't take that much really to do it. It just feels like I'm losing my grip on my own sense of my small self, and therefore it feels like wrong somehow. But the possibilities of using our triggeredness to deepen, to open, to breathe, to relax, and to see and to remember, as you're saying, that there's far more here than what my teensy little perception right now, because I'm so reactive, can see. There's just a hell of a lot more here in every situation you can possibly imagine. Every single one, there's more to see than what we can currently see, especially in our reactivity. And part of the more is this essential self that Michael Mead's inviting us into, that is always here, that can always be seen in any situation, is being, is essentialness, is depth, as you're saying. And to me, that feels like a very hopeful way to live, rather than one that thinks that I'm just stuck in this same old thing and I'm never going to get out of it.
What you're saying, when we're most able to do this, it's because we've started to see that there's a part of us that can observe our reactivity that's not caught up in it.
Yeah.
So you know, we can live a really, really long time just being caught up in our reactivity, taking it as the wholeness of everything. And when we get reactive and sort of mobilized into getting our way or collapsing away from the world, it seems like it's the only possibility that there is. And then implied in everything that you're saying is, but there's something of us that can be outside of all of that always. And that's the something of us that has the capacity to observe, right now, look, my body's contracting, my mind is closing down, I'm super sure that this is the case, and can name, that's reactivity, and that's the point at which our reactivity starts to become an opening into depth again. And that's why that this of us is always present, this aspect of us that I think is the same as what you and Michael Mead have been calling essentialness, and what this other language of depth that's come in, it's this, that it's always present. That's why it's never too late. That's the first thing. But the second thing is, it's also why practice can really help us, because it's possible to practice learning when you're out in the rain trying to get things in the boot of the car and getting in getting triggered into a thing. It's practice that can help us to be able to go, I know what this feels like. I know what my thought patterns are. I know how the world becomes. When I'm triggered, I have a choice. Always, because to be human is to be something more than our reactivity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And no matter how many times I fail to be present and aware, it doesn't actually matter, because the next time it will still be available. Like that's how benevolent essentialness is. So it doesn't matter how many times I've failed repeatedly at anything, because there's always another opening, always. It doesn't go anywhere, which is why I think Michael Mee talks about the timelessness of all of this, because it's not of time. It's not yes. of the order of the nature of time. It is ever present, the opportunity for us to, as he calls it, awaken, to wake up. And to me, that's like, given how many times I've failed, the fact that it's always there and the fact that I could always take it if I wanted to is a beautiful freedom that doesn't restrict me. It's like, oh no, you've only got 20 times. And if you don't do all those 20 times, or you don't get one of those 20 times, it's never coming back again. Sorry. It's just not that, which is kind of what normal life is, you know. It's not that. And that makes me feel really hopeful about all of us.
Yeah, I feel hopeful too. And one of the reasons I think that this conversation is important and why Michael Mead's writing is important is because for many of us, we live in a culture that has built itself on capitalizing on our reactivity. Mm. So politics, and particularly sort of populist kind of politics that's on the ascendant now, really, really draws on this. Is the more reactive we are, the more we're likely we are to believe something or to just react, follow something. But also a lot of the way that the attention economy is draws on our reactivity, will draw us from, to leap from one news story to the next news story to the next news, or, you know, one tweet to the next tweet to the next tweet, is it comes from the reactivity side of things. So it's super important that we have places that we can remember that this other of us.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I'm glad we're talking about this.
Well, it is our time to disappear off the airwaves. And I'm so grateful to be in this conversation and to at least try and feel into this with our words and say some things. And I'm really grateful for you, Justin, and your openness, and your and also grateful to Michael Mead for all of the incredible work that he does and the things that he writes are brilliant. And we will be here again next Sunday with a source chosen by Justin next time.
We will. Thank you, Lizzie, always, for what it's like to be doing this with you. For anyone who's still with us, I want to say, if you listen to us on a podcast and want to leave us a review, please do on Apple Podcasts or whatever it is, because that really helps people find us, which is such a gift. And the other thing to say is, come and learn with us if you want. In London on the 4th and 5th of May, we'll be doing our Foundations of Coaching program, which comes out of so much of the way that we're coming at this as well. And you can find out about that on wearethirdspace.org. And the video and source of this will be on turningtowards.life before long. See you soon, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.